I'm Rick Moore, and this is Connections, a podcast connecting you with news, newsmakers, sports, and entertainment voices all over the North Shore, brought to you by Moynihan Lumber of Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, and by the Institution for Savings, based in Newburyport, with branches throughout the region. All right, we have our own basketball insider here at MSO, the great Mike Grenier, Salem News, former Salem News sports writer, sports journalist, and sports historian as well. Mike, welcome back.
Well, we like talking on Mondays. Now we can do it on other days of the week.
Absolutely, I love it. Mike, the first thing I got to tell you is I seldom watch any sporting event from wire to wire. Once in a while, I will. Maybe we watch the Patriots, but we can fast forward when we save it and so on. Last night, I watched the Celtics from wire to wire, and it's been a long time since I've ever done that. And, man, there was a new vibe in the building, don't you think?
There's no question. There was a new energy. Of course, the trade deadline just passed in the NBA, and there were multiple deals. You really need a good computer to keep track of all the trades that different teams made. And the Celtics were certainly very active. Brad Stevens was active. And I thought they did a great job of getting, as the Celtics got rid of some players who weren't going to be useful now or in the future, and they acquired a couple of guys that will help them short-term and perhaps long-term. We're talking obviously about Derek White, who came from the San Antonio Spurs, and who in his opening game last night, not knowing the team and not knowing their plays and not knowing that much about the Celtics, Derek White gave him 15 points and 6 assists, and the Celtics beat the Denver Nuggets, and they're 7 or 8 in 7 games, over 500 right now, and they've positioned themselves into a sort of not a contender for the top spot in the Eastern Conference, but at least maybe to climb into the fourth spot eventually, to get maybe a home game, a home series in the first round of the playoffs. Of course, these are trends right now. They're playing very well. They've taken advantage of some teams that aren't good. But last night they beat a legitimately good team in Denver. And how about this guy, Jokic?
Oh, my God.
Nikola Jokic.
Yep.
He's a walking triple-double.
Oh.
He didn't have a great shooting night last night, but he still had like 20 points and 16 rebounds and 11 assists. He also had 9 turnovers. And he's a very good passer, but last night he made some silly passes. And the bottom line is they played well enough to win. And you talked about the vibe in the building. You could sense it in the crowd, and you can sense it on the Celtics bench, the energy that the trade brought, because I thought that was very interesting, Rick. I don't know if you noticed it at the end of the game, when Derek White was being interviewed in the post game, Jason Tatum made it a point to come over and sort of interrupt the interview, and he said, "What's the question?" Because he was so enthusiastic about having Derek White on the team.
Okay, no, I didn't see that.
So yeah, it was a cool moment, because in the pregame, even when Tatum was talking about the trades in themselves, he was very enthusiastic about Derek White. So there's something going on there. It could improve the chemistry of the team greatly, because Derek White won't be a starter, but it looks like he's going to be perhaps the sixth man that the Celtics are looking for.
Well, the thing that I was surprised at, Mike, certainly it was wonderful to watch the energy that he brought, the passing. And the thing of it is, as opposed to Richardson and Schroeder in particular, he plays, what do they call it, all three phases of the game. He can pass,
right.
He can shoot, and he can certainly defend, which is huge. And he's just so cool. I don't know. And, you know, the other thing I was thinking of, too, Mike, when the big thing, remember when they got Kyrie Irving and how excited everybody was? And then that fell through. And then we got Kemba Walker, same thing. But these guys were shooters. Right. What I like about what I saw last night, this kid looked like a Celtic.
Correct. He's not going to try to hog the spotlight when he's out there. I think he knows his role is going to be not as a starter. It could be an occasional starter if Marcus Smart is out for any reason and all that. But he knows his role is going to be sort of he's going to be relied upon as a sixth man who can do all those things you just mentioned. Play defense, pass, shoot, get some points. He doesn't take foolish shots. He seems very invested. I saw his post-game interview, and he seems very invested in being with this new team that has more potential, certainly, than the San Antonio Spurs did. The Spurs have been a down and out for a few years now, despite the great coaching of Greg Popovich. They haven't had the great players to do anything in the regular season or the playoffs. But with the Celtics, with that core of Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum and Marcus Smart, and we have to talk about Robert Williams here at some point, because he has been made the most dramatic improvement of anybody on the team, and one of the most dramatic improvements of anybody in the Eastern Conference and the entire league. This guy is playing superb basketball.
And I don't think we had expected much from him on offense, but he's contributing on offense. And Mike, tell me about the second half and the defense, because the Celtics with Williams is able to switch, I think, a lot like Russell, dare I say it, used to do. And he can go, he's all over the court. He can guard anybody. And that allows somebody else on defense to buzz around as well. Am I right? It looks like other guys can play better defense too because of what he does.
Oh yeah. There's definitely an extension there. When a center is a legitimate shot blocker, it makes everybody else's job easier, because on the outside, on the perimeter, the defense can take chances a little bit, play the angles, play the passing lanes, go look for a steal, because they know if the offensive guy goes by them, Robert Williams is out there to cover up anybody's mistakes. What I think he does better than, I'm not going to mention Bill Russell, however, what he does better than a lot of centers in the league right now, a lot of big players in the league, is his quickness allows him to go laterally, left to right or right to left, and come over and block a shot. He is extremely quick in getting to a shooter that's driving to the basket. He's extremely quick off his feet. He has, and the other thing I think, Rick, that we should mention is that, and I would put Dave Cowens in this category, you know, he's in the Dave Cowens category in terms of when there's a loose ball on the floor.
How about that, yeah.
He dives for the ball.
Yep.
And it's like he's like a linebacker trying to recover a fumble. He really, really goes after it every time, and very quickly, too. He's got extraordinary speed and quickness, and he's using it. He's not afraid to lay himself out there and to play with total energy for the minutes that he's out there. And I think what's going to help him is that instead of being backed up now by Enes Kanter Freedom, who was a very bad defensive player, now he'll have Daniel Tice, who is with the Celtics and knows their system, and who's a much better all-around player than Freedom. So I think Robert Williams, in the back of his mind, can say, okay, when I need a few minutes on the bench, Daniel Tice is a reliable backup. So I think the Celtics, that's a win-win for the Celtics right there. But Robert Williams has made an incredible improvement. And, Rick, if he ever develops, which he should, he's still a young player, that short jump shot from the foul line, or, you know, like a 12-foot to 15-foot jump shot, he took one last night because the shot clock was running down. He missed it. If he just develops that shot consistently and makes it a weapon, that's going to make a defender come out on him. And he's got the quickness to blow by any defender. So he has really turned into certainly a defensive weapon. And, of course, that athleticism that we talk about, some of the acrobatic dunks he makes, he makes it look natural.
Yeah.
And that's why, as you see, Rick, when you watch the game, when Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown are penetrating and the defense slides over and they make what looks to us like a crazy, stupid pass, Robert Williams has that long arm extension and he dunks the ball with ferocity.
Yeah.
So his athleticism is off the charts, and that's what, and he's been very effective as the season's gone along. And I think what last night he had like 16 points and 15 rebounds. He tried to keep up with Jokic. He had obviously a tough defensive assignment last night. However, he gave the Celtics a ton of rebounds last night and a very nice win.
You know, one other thing about Williams that I see, you mentioned a football attribute, and I call it his closing speed, like if he were a safety or a corner, because sometimes he'll block shots coming from behind. The runner will get ahead of him somehow, or it could be someone else's man, but he'll come from behind, close that gap, or even go out to the perimeter, close the gap. He's a freak of an athlete.
Right, closing out at the perimeter. As soon as you mentioned that, I had this image in my mind. I don't know how many times he's done it this year, where a guard or a small forward from the opposing team, with the clock running down, is ready to launch, let's say maybe a three-pointer or just inside the three-point line, and Robert Williams knows that that offensive player doesn't have much time to shoot, and he closes out really quickly, and he actually blocks a shooter's shot from the perimeter, from that 20-foot area,
yeah.
22-foot area. And to me, that is extraordinary. That's extraordinary that as a center, he'll come out from, let's say, underneath the basket and have that closing speed, and also has the agility not to foul the shooter. As we know, we've seen plenty of guys close out on a three-point shot, and the late action happens. They happen to crash into the body, or there's enough contact where the referee has to call a three-point shot. And Robert Williams seems to have the agility to avoid the contact and still block the shot. And it's really a gift that an instinctive gift that he has, or combined with a knowledge of the game of playing it his whole life. But he's able to block shots, like you said, from behind and coming out to the perimeter closeout. And I don't know, of course, you know, with the analytics these days, I'm sure there's a category for that. Closing speed.
Yeah, I know.
All that stuff. You know, you and I, we're not into the analytics part, but we know what we see. What's happening on the court?
Well,
he's really good at those two aspects.
Yeah, first couple of times I saw that, I thought, this is crazy. He's coming from under the basket out to the 3-point line, and he's blocking shots, or he's forcing these guys to make a bad pass. And I'm thinking, damn, he's out of control. But he's not. He knows what he's doing. It's because he does it time after time. He did a couple times last night, and he forced a guard to make a bad pass instead of he was going to shoot, and he saw Williams coming at him like a freight train.
Right. So, and you mentioned the Celtics defense. I believe they gave up 60 points in the first half and only 42 in the second half. So obviously those are huge factors in the game that sometimes people overlook. But I mean, they improved from quarter to quarter against a good offensive team. I mean, really, Denver is a very good offensive team. They're going to get better when they have Jamal Murray back. He's been injured all year. They'll be a factor in the playoffs in the Western Conference. But that was kind of, you know, I call it a signature win for the Celtics, but a much-needed win over a good team, because lately the Celtics have been stomping on the bad teams, which is what you should do and what you want them to do as they try to navigate their way up the standings in the Eastern Conference. So they're taking care of business against the bad teams. And last night, you know, it took care of business against a good team. And Sunday, you got, I believe, the Atlanta Hawks coming in, and that'll be a special day. I believe this is Kevin Garnett's retirement jersey day or something like that. So they're going to be pumped up for that game.
I have one more observation on last night's game, because it seems to be a continuation of how they've been playing over this seven-game win streak. They didn't move the ball that well in the first half, in my opinion, and they were shooting way too much from outside, you know, and missing them. Second half, that ball was whipping around the perimeter like it's been in the last few weeks, and it's great to watch, because it barely touches someone's hands and it's out to the next guy.
And not only that, the defense gets off balance and it creates really advantageous shots for the Celtics. There was one play last night where the ball went out to the corner, and you might remember this one, Rick. Jason Tatum tracked it down, and the defense, because they were in a scrambling position, the defense didn't know what to do, and Tatum looked, he was at the baseline, and he saw that there was an open lane, and instead of shooting it from the three-point line, which he could have, and which earlier in the season he would have, he took it to the basket and got himself a layup and got fouled.
Yeah.
That's the kind of play you want your stars to make, because they're going to get the call. Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, if it's a 50-50 thing with some contact at the basket, they're going to get the calls most of the time to get to the foul line. So, you know, that's the much easier way to score than to try to develop a consistent three-point shot.
Yeah, and, you know, that's the original three-point play, and I think that's been lost a little bit here with this arc. Let me ask you, expanding out a little bit, Mike, the trade that the Celtics, the trades, I should say, plural, give me a comment on those. Is it a case of addition by subtraction?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. Well, it's addition by addition in the case of, let's say, Derek White and Tice. But it's also addition by subtraction because Romeo Langford, obviously, was Danny Ainge's first-round draft pick at the number 14 spot just 3 years ago, never developed, was injured far too often, and in my mind, seeing every game, never showed a passion for the game, okay? And to me, he was just Deadwood sitting on the bench and playing occasionally and not showing much improvement. So you subtracted him. Earlier they had subtracted guys like Juancho Hernan, Gomez, and guys that weren't playing, Fernando, guys that were barely playing, are no longer here. So, and I thought it was kind of telling when they had Brad Stevens on talking about the trades, saying that he acquired players who have a real court presence, who know how to play, and who make the right decisions. It was, they were very pointed comments, and I thought indirectly that it was criticism of Danny Ainge's draft picks.
Yeah.
Because he seemed to be saying, and if I can interpret it correctly and read between the lines, he seemed to be saying that he acquired players who can play immediately and help the team, rather than guys who are borderline NBA players who, you know, may make it 2 or 3 years down the line. Now, I think that being said, the guy that Ainge took the year after Langford, Aaron Naismith, is also in trouble. In other
yeah,
words,
yeah.
he's still on the team. As we saw last night, he was a coach's decision, did not play,
yeah.
okay? And I know at times when he's played, people praise him for his shooting as a potential shooter. However, the bottom line is, career-wise, he's a 30, his small sample size is not that large, but he's a career 30-point shooter in his short time in the NBA. And I think right now they need him on the bench just as an extra body because of injuries, but he could be on his way out too. Either later this season as a buyout somewhere, or maybe they won't bring him back next season. So they're still a little short on the bench right now because they got rid of some driftwood. You know, they can call it driftwood, guys that weren't going to help.
Mm-hmm.
They're a little short on the bench, so they may not sustain an injury to a key player. They may not be able to sustain it in the playoffs, an injury to a key player. However, they're starting to fill in with guys who can actually help them. Tice will certainly help them. I mean, Tice, when he was with the Celtics earlier, her four-year stint, was a very good asset as a shooter, a guy who could run the pick and roll, who could actually hit the occasional three-pointer, which Cantor Freedom could not do.
Right.
He does a lot of things that Cantor Freedom simply can't do, defense being the primary one. So, I think addition by subtraction is one way to look at it, and also addition by addition, if we can say that, in terms of getting White and Tice. So, yeah, I think they've put themselves in a better position in the Eastern Conference race.
Well, speaking of that, how much stronger is Philadelphia now?
Well, Philadelphia, you know, you're right. Harden, though, I think it's a question mark, because I think Harden has been injured. He's got a hamstring injury right now. I know it's supposed to be short-term, but they keep saying, okay, he's out for tonight, and he's out for two nights from now. And Harden, when he's on all cylinders, we know he's a triple-double sometimes that can happen, and he can shoot it from outside, and he goes to the foul line. How many times have we seen James Harden? Sometimes you look at the statistics after, he goes to the foul line, and he goes 17 for 18, 15 for 16. Wow, those are astronomical numbers at the foul line. Can he do that anymore? That's what we're going to find out, Rick. And if he can, Philadelphia is a real threat to win the Eastern Conference. But where, to me, in my mind, having seen Harden's entire career, he's still out of shape. He's not in condition, okay? Yeah. I don't know if anybody's mentioned, but he's definitely not in shape. And I think he's had these nagging injuries, and that's the reason he's had nagging injuries. He's not in prime condition. Now, obviously, the Nets had a so-called, as everybody knows, at the beginning of the season, the Nets had a so-called dream team with their big three
mm-hmm.
of Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and Harden. And boy, has the bottom fallen out. They've lost 10 straight. They've traded Harden. Kyrie Irving refuses to get vaccinated. And they're 2-8 with Kyrie Irving in the lineup playing only on the road.
Wow.
2-8. And overall, they've lost 10 in a row. And 2 months ago, you and I, you know, because we speak about basketball on Monday nights, you and I could not have pictured the Nets falling below the Celtics in the standings.
Absolutely.
So the Nets were in first place for a while. Things were going, they were humming along, going okay. But now they're a completely different team. And, they lose Harden. Philadelphia could benefit from that. Now they get Ben Simmons. All right. And that's, again, we're talking a huge question mark. Ben Simmons, as we know, went into a total pout during the playoffs last year in Philadelphia. He refused to shoot from outside. He refused to shoot from inside, and famously passed up a dunk in a seventh game of a series, passed up a dunk because he has no confidence in his ability. And then in the off season, he blamed the 76ers, and he claims that he had mental problems, and who knows? I'm not going to enter the area of psychology or mental problems because it could be real or it could be imagined. But all we know is he hasn't played a single game all year, and he was just loathing his time in Philadelphia sitting around, and now he'll feel rejuvenated. But what does he have to give to offer the Nets? We don't know. That's a question that remains. If he plays to his capabilities, yeah, they're going to become a better team than they are right now because they've lost 10 in a row. But can he put them in a position to win the Eastern Conference? I seriously doubt it. He just doesn't have that type of offensive ability. He's a very marginal offensive player. I mean, heck, Marcus Smart, who we, you know, Boston people criticize, and we've criticized his shooting and his shot selection, is a much bigger offensive threat than Ben Simmons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think Smart is making smarter decisions with his shooting as well.
It's right. It's true. He has. He's playing better basketball. But, you know, if we're talking the Eastern Conference, Rick, the overall picture, obviously two teams that we haven't mentioned yet, the Miami Heat have been consistently good all year, and they're in first place. And the Chicago Bulls are playing really well. DeMar DeRozan, I mean, you don't think of him as an MVP candidate, but that guy is playing. He'll give you 30, 35 points a game, 7 or 8 assists. He's been a phenomenal player for the Bulls, and that's why they're in second place. And, of course, the defending champion Milwaukee Bucks have been on and off with injuries, but they're only a game and a half, two games out of first place. And they have Giannis, they have Chris Middleton, they have Drew Holiday. That's a big three right there that automatically makes them a threat, okay? Mm-hmm. And, of course, talking about the local kid, Pat Connaughton, I was watching the game the other night, late game, broke his finger while reaching in to try to defend against Chris Paul, one of the best players in basketball. But something, you know, he either hit his hand against Chris Paul's body or it got bent backwards, and I could see him grabbing his finger. It's the ring finger on his shooting hand. And he went home and he went back to the team hotel in a cast. Mm-hmm. I know that for a fact. And they have not released any information about how long he's going to be out. Obviously, that's forthcoming. They'll know. You know, you can't hide that. It was an injury on national TV. And like any other player, though, they'll the MRI and they'll cast him and then they'll forecast. They'll estimate how long he's going to be out. But I think it's going to be a period of weeks. And I know the coach, Mike Budenholzer, was alluding to the fact that he's going to be out for a while. And the thing about the Bucks is, earlier that day, they had traded Dante DiVincenzo, who plays Connaughton's position, and they had traded two or three other guys who were capable of playing that position because they felt secure in having Connaughton, A, being the key guy off the bench, the sixth man, or B, he has also started 18 games this season. He has started 18 games, so therefore, he is one of the most versatile players on that team, and they were counting on him for the rest of the season, and all of a sudden he gets injured on the night when earlier in the day they had traded three or four players. Hmm. So they were a little bit of a bind there.
All right, next time we do this, I'm going to ask Mike Grenier to take a look at the Western Conference as well as talk about the Celtics. That's the great Mike Grenier. I'm Rick Moore. This is MSONewsSports.com. This has been Connections, a podcast connecting you with news, newsmakers, sports, and entertainment voices all over the North Shore. Brought to you by Moynihan Lumber of Beverly, North Reading, and Plaston, New Hampshire. By the Institution for Savings, based in Newburyport, with branches throughout the region. Connect with Connections by emailing msonewsports@gmail.com.